please do not make the mistake of so many Christians, especially those in evangelical and charismatic circles, where all they do is to present their testimony.
Christian apologist Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And their testimony can be very useful, but you don't want to give the non-Christian the impression that as long as Christianity makes somebody feel good, it's true. That certainly doesn't follow at all. We want to present Christianity as objective truth, not depending on our feelings, but depending upon the facticity of what God has done.
You can listen to Dr. Montgomery's presentation, Making a Legal Case for the Resurrection of Christ, on a recording of our spring and fall 2018 conferences. We'll send you an audio DVD or thumb drive for a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300 to Issues Etc. Learn more and order at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
Françaises, Français.
My fellow citizens.
Nous voilà ensemble.
We are together.
Au rendez-vous de notre pays et de notre avenir.
To talk about our future.
Les événements de ces dernières
the
semaines dans l'Hexagone,
of the last few weeks in France and overseas have deeply disturbed the nation.
Des revendications
they include legitimate claims
et un enchaînement de violence
and
inadmissible.
Expressions of violence that are unacceptable.
Le dire
and I would like to say so immediately. This violence will benefit from no indulgence on our part. We have seen the opportunists who have tried to take advantage of sincere anger to manipulate it. We have all seen, we've all witnessed irresponsible politicians whose only aim is to cause disorder and anarchy.
That is French President Emmanuel Macron speaking during a nationally televised address on Saturday about the so-called Yellow Vest riots in France. The Wall Street Journal is reporting as of 1 hour ago that Macron's government easily survived a no-confidence vote in Parliament today over its handling of those protests that have been sweeping the nation's capital there in Paris over the last several weeks. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery here for the next few minutes about those riots in Paris and a terrorist attack at a Christmas market in Strasbourg, France. A little bit later, Holly Shear will join us from The Federalist to talk about the mockery and misinterpretation of Christianity that's in the news as Christmas approaches. Pastor Ted Geese will review the movie Creed 2. It's the latest in the Rocky series and has a theme of fatherhood. And then Bishop Keith Ackerman joins us after that to talk about a sex change ritual in the Church of England. He's a former bishop of the Episcopal Diocese in Quincy, Illinois. Joining us to talk about two stories, a terrorist attack at a Christmas market in Strasbourg, France, and the riots in Paris, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. He's a resident of Strasbourg, France. He's emeritus professor at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's professor at large with 1517, the Legacy Project, director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Defending the Gospel in Legal Style. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back.
You're most welcome.
Beginning with the terrorist attack at the Christmas market there in Strasbourg, what do we know about the suspect?
Well, we know that he was a convinced Muslim. The reason that he got away was that he stopped a taxi that was driven by a Muslim, not anybody he knew. And the reason he didn't kill the taxi driver was the taxi driver said that he, the taxi driver, also was a convinced Muslim and prayed continually. The suspect, Sherif Sheikhat, is at large at the present time. There's a shoot to kill out on him, and the fellow was radicalized, and he has two brothers who also have been members of radical organizations, and he was on a terror watch list, the so-called S-file, and he was being watched, and all of that. And but they no one thought that he was going to do anything of this kind. And once the attack took place, of course, the residence was gone through, and there they found munitions, for goodness sake, knives, and a 22 rifle, and a hand grenade. So this fellow was a person of considerable danger. He was, however, a unique quantity in the sense that he was not put up to this by any kind of organization. He apparently decided to carry this thing out entirely on his own and went ahead and did that.
What can you tell us about the city of Strasbourg and the Christmas market that we're hearing about?
Well, it's the most popular Christmas market in France. These Christmas markets began in Germany, of course, and they go back to Reformation times and in certain instances even earlier. The Nuremberg Christmas market, for example, is very, very famous. And in France, because the Alsace was part of the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation before the Thirty Years' War and has a Germanic background, these Christmas markets have been very, very popular in the Alsace. And the one in Strasbourg is much larger and more extensive than anywhere else. There are others in the Alsace, and now there are others in other parts of France. But the one in Strasbourg is the one to which a vast number of people come. And it's very interesting. The last 2 years, the anti-terrorist forces, which are very, very good in France, have cut off the whole center of town for any kind of road traffic. It's impossible to park your car anywhere in the very center of the town. And there have been very tight controls, but obviously you cannot be there for every single person who enters the center of town on foot. And that's what this fellow did. He entered on foot. It hasn't been revealed as to how he got the gun. It may have been planted days before somewhere, but in any event, he came in on foot, and he did his shootings along various of the small streets that are right there in the center of town, and then, as I say, got out by stopping a taxi at the edge of the center of town, and it so happened that the driver was a Muslim, and so the driver didn't get killed. And to the driver, Sharif said that he was avenging his brothers in Syria. By brothers, he meant his fellow religionists, of course. The whole thing is, as always with these situations, Islamic-centered.
Why would the Christmas market then be targeted by the shooter?
Well, the shooter, of course, is dead set against Christianity, so that undoubtedly is a factor. But this Christmas market is so well known that by doing anything like that, by disrupting it, what this does is to hurt the economy of Strasbourg considerably. It discourages tourists from coming to this activity. It discourages people from attending church services there in the center of town, and it spills over to France in general. There's a tendency in the United States, I've had people sending me these emails saying, France is obviously no longer a Christian country in any sense of the word, and what's the matter with you for living there, and on and around, and it's a center of terrorism, and none of that is the truth, but this plays into the hands of the kind of mentality that this fellow represents. The idea is to create such a fuss symbolically that this can hurt Western nations, democracy, Christianity to the maximum through public relations. Doing something at this Christmas market in Strasbourg is the perfect way to make the worst kind of statement from the standpoint of Muslim terrorism.
How would you describe the state of Islam in France?
The older Muslims, those let's say, who have been here for a very long time. Second, third generation Muslims have been thoroughly assimilated, and they are horrified by this kind of thing. The fact of the matter is that they probably shouldn't be horrified, because if they read the Quran more carefully and Sharia literature and that kind of thing, they would see that the terrorists are really more consistent with historic Islam than they are. But they have become assimilated to a Western understanding of things to such an extent that they are not the ones at the root of this kind of business. The problem comes from the first generation, especially from immigrants who have come in from North Africa. And it's much easier for people to do that because these were formerly French colonies, and these countries, Tunisia and Algeria, for example, the French language is still an important second language. So they're able to get into France, but then their children, especially young people who would rather create a fuss on the streets than get a decent job, that kind of thing, become grist for the mill of radicalism. And there have been some radical mosques here, as there have been in England, that have fomented the kind of problem that exists. And there have been young people who have gone to fight in Syria and in the Near East in behalf of Hijra, the Holy War, and all the rest of it. So this is unfortunate. There's no question about it. And it's particularly irritating to me because I'm taking French citizenship, and for to do this legally, you can't imagine the amount of documentation and the interviews that require a speaking knowledge of the French language and so on down the line. So I have to go through all of this, whereas some of these North Africans have gotten in here either quasi-legally or illegally, and they cause the trouble, and they don't have to do anything in order to be here.
What measures has the French government taken in response to, really now, what we're talking about is probably at least a decade of terrorist attacks by Muslims?
Well, they've tightened down, of course, through police action and through anti-terrorist forces within the gendarmerie. Their ways of dealing with this are primarily of a policing nature. Now, they could certainly be doing more in the area of values, but the fact is that the French educational system is so thoroughly orientated toward Western values, and all of the and it's a required educational system for people up through the age of 16, that they've done, I think, just about all that one can do in that respect. There's an effort very recently to get a national Muslim council that will serve as a kind of control over the education of imams, clergy, and the like. This has run into some problems, of course, because of the separation of church and state in France. So there's a limit to the extent that the government is able to impact the education of clergy within the Islamic faith. In my humble opinion, and I have an article on this in my book, Defending the Gospel in Legal Style, in my opinion, one of the biggest problems, and this isn't just in France, it's in the West in general, is that we don't recognize that Islam is inherently a violent religion, and the terrorism that takes place invariably within an Islamic context derives from that kind of perspective. In other words, Islam is one dangerous religion, and I've argued that there ought to be far tighter controls on Islamic immigration than on any other kind of immigration. Right? It's as if a cannibal religion was in operation. And we wouldn't stand for that kind of thing. And it's unfortunate that we take this view that, after all, they're worshiping the same God the Christians are worshiping and so on. Listen, that is absolutely not the case. The God of Islam is not the God of the Bible. And if anybody thinks that that's not so, then they haven't read either the Quran or the Bible or both.
So how would you compare, as we speak to you right now, you are in London, you have a home in Strasbourg. How would you compare Islam in France as opposed to Islam in Great Britain?
Well, the problem is very much the same. In both of these countries, there's been too much laxity in immigration policies. And in England, especially, there is a hesitancy to condemn any religious position. You know, the English have always tended to be more neutral when it comes to things like that. I mean, in polite society in England, you don't get into religious discussions because it might produce conflict and that kind of business. And that paper that I mentioned, included in my book, Defending the Gospel in Legal Style, that paper I offered to an English journal, and they refused it. It was later published in Germany and then in the United States. But the English just hate conflict, and especially they hate religious conflict. And so there's been more of a problem in England than in France with these radical mosques. In France, they have closed down a number of them, and they have shipped the imams back to, I don't know, wherever they came from. In England, there's been less along that line. And there have been terror attacks in England as well, in London, for example. The French, in general, are more serious and are less worried about being non-politically correct than the English are. In the United States, the only reason in the United States you don't have these problems to the same degree is that there's so few Muslims in the United States in comparison with the total population. I tell you, if you had more Muslims per cubic inch, you would have exactly the same kind of difficulties. And after all, I think none of us can forget the Twin Towers, right, which was motivated exactly the same way as this terrorist attack in Strasbourg. The guy in Strasbourg is yelling, "Allah is powerful," as he shoots people down, and the people who were in charge of the Twin Tower misery were taking exactly the same kind of attitude. You don't find that kind of thing being done by Christians anywhere under any circumstances. You can bring up the Crusades if you want, but let me tell you, that was quite a while ago, and now in the 21st century, if you want terrorism, you go to Islam. That's where you find it.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. He's a resident of Strasbourg, France, and director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. When we come back, we'll turn to the subject of the Yellow Vest protests in Paris. Thanks to our listeners, Issues Etc. has operated independently and in the black for 10 consecutive years. With 3 weeks left in 2018, we're $77,000 short of projected expenses. Please make a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Jesus is the reason for the season. How often do we hear that this time of year? But what if just for a moment we shifted our focus away from the holly jolly holiday season and simply said, Jesus is the reason, period. Join John Kleinig, Heidi Sias, and others as they explore the great and wondrous mystery of Christ's incarnation in the December issue of The Lutheran Witness. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Casting Christ's net on the internet. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a terrorist attack at a Christmas market in Strasbourg, France, and the riots in Paris. Our guest is international human rights attorney, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. If you appreciate informative interviews like this, please make a year-end tax-deductible contribution to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. With 3 weeks left in 2018, we're $77,000 short of projected expenses. You can make a secure online gift at issuesetc.org. You can donate by giving us a call, 618-223-8385, or you can contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping Issues Etc. in mind at the end of the year. Dr. Montgomery, I also wanted you to talk a little bit about these yellow vest protests in Paris. Why are they taking place?
Well, no one really knows. The fact of the matter is that they started just because of a minor rise in gas prices for automobiles, you know, automobile gas. And the rise was not any gigantic increase at all, not greater than we've had in the past. But it's been accompanied by higher taxation in various areas and some cutting of social benefits. And why has that taken place? Well, it's because France is not run on a balanced budget. And for years, everyone has said that you can't do that. And so the new French president, Macron, got a majority in parliament, in the legislature, and they made these changes in the direction of more financial responsibility. The previous governments, whether they were to the left or to the right, definitely did not do this. And the French people took this during Macron, the beginning years of Macron's tenure as president. He's been in power now 3 years. And at the beginning, there didn't seem to be much of a fuss. But eventually, the average Frenchman says, the wonderful thing about France is all of these social benefits. And we're not going to have those cuts in social benefits, and we're not going to have the taxes increased. The state is our nanny. So apparently, just as a result of this gas price thing, this encouraged general revolt and rebellion. And this is compounded by the fact that in the French Constitution makes the right to strike a constitutional right. That is not the case in most countries, but it is in France. And what that's done is to give Frenchmen the feeling that if there's a problem, instead of electing somebody different to the legislature, to the presidency, go out and strike. And the strikes have been erratic and irrational, and the government has held its position on it and has made some concessions, but these concessions have not been gigantic. I think it's going to blow over. The difficulty has been especially that it's been just before Christmas, and that's not exactly the best time to have any economic problems.
So why is President Macron facing a vote of no confidence today?
Well, because of the fact that he has not taken the traditional French approach to economic problems. And the traditional French approach has been that you don't try to pull in the reins. You simply disguise the fact that your budget is in a hideous mess. I think that Macron has acted very responsibly, and the vote of confidence is certainly not going to go through. There are always radicals in the parliament, and these votes of confidence come up regularly and invariably go by the wayside unless the president has done something that is truly irresponsible.
What does the process of no confidence entail? We Americans are largely unfamiliar with the parliamentary process.
Well, all it does is to indicate that the parliament is not happy with the party in power, and if the vote were very, very strongly against the president and against his party, then the appropriate thing to do would be to, in England, to call for an election. All right? You can't do that in France. The president has a five-year term, as do the members of parliament. It's just a slap on the wrist in France. It would not cause any change in government. At all, but it would look very bad, and since Macron has only another 2 years before the possibility of a second term, this could hurt him considerably in the public eye.
When was the last French government that was overturned?
The Hollande government that was in power up until the time of Macron's election, the Hollande government wasn't overturned as such, but that socialist government made so many mistakes and alienated so many people that they were thrown out lock, stock, and barrel at the time of the last presidential election. It is very, very rare that in France that a vote of no confidence can have any practical effect. It has a psychological effect, of course, but it doesn't result in a sudden change in government at all. In England, it does.
What impact do you think these yellow vest protests are having on tourism and on business in the nation's capital?
Well, they've hurt the economy considerably, especially since their protests have come just before Christmas. Once these protests begin, even if they begin in a very responsible way, invariably you get people associated with the protest movements who are radicals and who are just interested in smashing everything. And there have been instances in Paris already where stores have been looted, and this has been very difficult for the police to control. Again, this is not a general collapse of the country or anything like that, but it's an example of how unfortunate it can be when radicalism and protest can rise to a revolutionary sort of level. This is not something that should disturb people in coming to France. For example, they're not going to get killed or hurt. They're certainly not going to get killed or hurt in Strasbourg. This incident in Strasbourg was an individual incident, and the French police powers are very, very strong and very competent. But it's a worry that there is that kind of perspective in a country, and I think that if we could reduce the Islamic influence in France, that perspective would decline immensely.
What did you make of President Macron's national address that was delivered on Saturday?
I thought it was very effective, and it was particularly effective because he said if he had not been doing what he should, he was genuinely sorry, and this was a mea culpa kind of presentation, making clear that he was not an arrogant aristocrat, which some people have condemned him as being, but was really feeling for the genuine issues. I thought it was very well done, and in general, it was treated positively. The people who said didn't make any difference were usually the people who were against him and his policies from the beginning.
Simon Jenkins has written in a recent op-ed piece in The Guardian saying, quote, "France's political crises are always played out in riots, unlike Britain's," end quote. What do you make of that comparison?
That, in a sense, that's right. You don't have the riots in England, but this is largely because of what we were saying earlier, that in England there is a kind of neutralism. If you want a biblical passage that covers England, it's undoubtedly the church at Laodicea. They are lukewarm. They're lukewarm. And in a lukewarm situation, you know, you don't have riots and trouble and so on. But that doesn't make lukewarmness a solution in the slightest. And sometimes it's almost better to have the conflict out in the open and clear so that you can do something to deal with it. So, I personally have always been a lot happier to see how Frenchmen deal with problems than to see how English deal with problems. There is that cartoon where the two Englishmen are on a narrow bridge, each going in the opposite direction, and the bridge will only allow one person to pass, and each of them are saying, after you, and they both turn to skeletons because they've never been able to get past each other. So I don't think that that's a fair comment on the part of that journalist, but it's an accurate statement of the difference.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is a resident of Strasbourg, France. He's emeritus professor at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's professor at large with 1517, the Legacy Project, director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Defending the Gospel in Legal Style. You can purchase his books and find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, held annually in Strasbourg, France, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Montgomery, thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure.
Holly Shear is with us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about some instances of mockery and misinterpretation of Christianity in the news as Christmas approaches.
Well, a human nature is what makes you human and not a dog or a fish or a turtle. Your human nature is what sets your ultimate capacities and determines the kind of thing you are. You don't get a human nature in degrees. You either have it or you don't. There's no degree involved.
Scott Klusendorf speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Well, people today are quite willing to concede that you have a human nature. They're willing to concede I do, but they don't want to concede that embryo is. And here's the question you put to them when they challenge you. How do two human parents create offspring that isn't human, but later become so?
You can listen to Scott Klusendorf's presentation, Making the Case for Life, and all the speakers at our 2018 Making the Case conferences on an audio DVD or flash drive. We'll send it to you for a $300 year-end tax-deductible donation. Look for the link at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Hello there. I'm Juanita Wood, the owner of Ad Crucem. My dream of having a Christ-focused Christmas tree has been 18 years in the making. Our tree now brims with Christian symbols to confess the faith. We have the Cairo, Ixus, Chalice, Agnus Dei, Baptism Shell, and 100 other Christ-focused ornaments that are both beautiful and meaningful. Visit adcrucem.com to see our theologically sound greeting cards, jewelry, gifts, churchwares, banners, certificates, and ornaments. That's adcrucem.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Grace Lutheran, Elgin, Texas. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia. St. John Lutheran, Mayville, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Perrysburg, Ohio. Trinity Lutheran, Okmulgee, Oklahoma. Zion Lutheran, Gwinner, South Dakota. Trinity Lutheran, St. Charles, Missouri. And Christ Lutheran, Normal, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at the website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.